progressive voice of Minnesota. You're on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. It is a Wednesday afternoon, a very busy show ahead of us today. As coming up in the second half of the show, we are going to be speaking with Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. A lot of topics to cover with her, including that Bob Kroll letter that was sent to the fellow police union members that included a paragraph which seemed like he was implying that he might be working with Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka to either, at best, run an end around Governor Tim Walz, or at worst, even some sort of coup attempt. So we're going to be talking with Susan Kent coming up in the second half about that. We'll also be talking about a very controversial tweet from Mary Kiffmeyer, everyone's favorite Republican senator. Yeah, she was just out there having a casual Facebook conversation, an open and public Facebook conversation with a white supremacist. So we'll address that as well. A lot of ugliness in the world out there, unfortunately. The big breaking news that we have is that Keith Ellison, the Attorney General of Minnesota, has announced that Derek Chauvin, the police officer who was having his knee on the neck of George Floyd, his murder charge has been upgraded to second degree. It originally was third degree. It has now been upgraded to second degree. And the other three officers in the case are also set to be charged. So we'll be following along with that story as well. So lots and lots of news out there. But I do want to speak to one of my current AM 950 radio hosts on our radio station. That is Ellie Krug, who hosts Ellie 2.0 radio that you can hear every morning from 7 until 8 a.m. Ellie, of course, is an idealist if you've heard her show before, and I think she'll kind of give us a much-needed breath of fresh air because there's so much negativity in the news over the past few days and weeks. And Ellie, over the past few days, has been working on a 10-point plan for changing Minnesota's diversity and inclusion landscape, coming up with a plan to hopefully help things improve in Minnesota and also around the country. Because, Ellie, as you talk about in your plan, it was mostly crafted for Minnesota, but a lot of these actions that you are proposing could certainly be implemented in other cities around the country as well. So, Ellie, really appreciate you joining me on the show today.
Hey, Brett, I'm really thrilled to be on the show and to talk to you in a different way other than you as my producer.
Yeah, so, doing it a little bit differently today. So, we'll be a little bit different, but I think we're going to have a good conversation here because I want to talk about your 10-point plan for changing Minnesota's diversity and inclusion landscape and then also briefly touch on your experience in Minneapolis over the weekend because you were down there on the front lines talking to a number of folks about what was happening in their community. You, of course, were a credentialed member of the media, so you had a chance to get a firsthand account from a number of people that you spoke to. But let's go ahead and start talking about your 10-point plan. What inspired you to come up with this plan?
Well, Brett, so you know that when I'm not a radio host on AM 950, my real passion in the world is being a trainer on human inclusivity, diversity, and inclusion. That has taken me across the country, but also, more importantly for right now, across Minnesota, and a couple of observations from my work. So human inclusivity is literally the extent to which a human feels that they matter. They feel that you matter to a business or an organization, you're going to stay there. If you feel that you don't matter, you're going to leave. What we're seeing right now across our country is a whole group of people, African-American people, but also all people of color other than the white color, feeling as if they do not matter in America, as if they've never had a seat at the table, because legitimately, they really have not. And so, on the other hand, what I've also found when I do my work is that people are very, very hungry to learn ways to how to be more welcoming, to be more accepting to people who are different than them. I have a saying that 98% of all humans have good empathetic hearts, 2% total sociopaths. We've probably been seeing a little bit more than those 2% lately here in the Twin Cities and in some other cities. But for the most part, the vast majority of humans want to get it right. They just don't know how to do it or they're afraid. And my 10-point plan is a way of helping everyone to get it right.
And talking about how you think, 98% of people have an empathetic heart. It's just trying to kind of unleash that, those conversations that people can have with each other. Because I think you're right that a lot of people don't want to be divided. They don't want to hate other people. And I think a lot of it is just people misunderstanding each other or not going out of their way to learn about people who don't look like them. I think a good example to maybe even focus on is what's happening with the protests. I think so often in the media, we're focusing on what is being protested rather than why people are out protesting. And I think if we're to engage in that why question, it could go a long way towards helping people understand each other and just overall engage with each other in a much different way rather than just seeing people from 10,000 miles away on the news.
Well, and I think the key point about one of the key points about the protests is that it's not just African-American, not just black colored people that are in the streets. It is. There are a whole lot of white, you know, white color. I call people white colored people because most white people don't believe white's a color. There are a lot of white color people out in the streets as well. A lot of younger people, you know, in their early 20s to early 30s. These are folks who all as a group are facing a very rigged system. You know, they're facing challenges around student loans, challenges around living wages. All of that, and they're in the streets because they are fed up. And the handwriting is on the wall that unless they are in the street, unless they do that, nothing is going to change because the system has had multiple opportunities to change, and it's refused to do that. And so that is why I created this document about a 10-point plan on how to change the landscape. And among the things that my 10-point plan calls for, and it's a very broad, you know, kind of plan, among the things is that everyone in Minnesota be given the opportunity to go through implicit bias, human inclusivity training. Everyone, the entire state, all 6 million of us. Well, I mean, we've got some kids, you know, 7 or 8 years old. It's not going to work, although you can fashion things for even younger kids. And by the way, kids aren't born having prejudice against other humans. They learn that in their families, and they learn that from messaging from society.
And by the way, if you'd like to find a copy of that 10-point plan, you can sign up for Ellie's newsletter, The Ripper, The Ripple, rather. We'll get that pointed, or we'll get that posted over at am950radio.com and include that in our newsletter, which is going to be sent out tomorrow. So lots of different places where you can find Ellie's plan. But
Brett, they can go to my website at elliekrug.com and go to the menu item that says projects. Find that as well as you know, I've also put out a call for Governor Walz to establish a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the state of Minnesota to deal finally with the issue of racism in our state.
So let's run through some of these points that you have in this plan. And the first one that really caught my attention were having facilitated community-wide neighborhood meetings. And one of the things that kind of struck me was the idea that you're going to have people from different parts of the city meet with people from other parts of the city to have conversations. Or you're talking about how in smaller towns you might have native-born or majority race residents visit with immigrant residents in their town. Talk a little bit about what these would look like, these facilitated community-wide neighborhood meetings.
Well, you know, so let's just take Minneapolis, where we would have people traveling from in the plan, it's, I say, South Minneapolis to North Minneapolis and vice versa. But it could be any part of the city, as well as, you know, it could certainly be the burbs, you know, travel from Edina to North Minneapolis or to South Minneapolis. And the whole idea here is that much of the reason why humans make other humans other, quotation marks around the word other, is because we don't know them. You know, we feel that they are different from us. And the reality is that all humans, we're all attempting to survive the human condition. We have a myriad of things in common. I'm a big believer that the only pathway to getting past racism, through getting past stereotypes, getting past, you know, very horrific behavior from one group of human to other group of humans, the only pathway through all of that is becoming familiar with other humans. You sit down, you have a cup of coffee, You sit down, you start talking about your kids or your pets or talking about your dreams. And you know what? We've all got the same thing going for us. We all want our children to succeed. We do. It doesn't matter what color of skin you have or what economic stature you are. We all want our children to succeed. And it's just about trying to reinforce the idea of shared common American values. And we cannot do that unless we are brave enough and take risks to sit with people who ordinarily we would not sit with and get to know them.
And expanding on that idea, a number of your points have to do with getting the business community involved, which I think is really important to do as well, because I think of how I've lived in a couple of small towns in my past, working small town radio, and often you do have immigrants that live in that small town that are in segregated to one kind of section because they don't have a chance to really engage with other people like in an everyday fashion. So if you do this through the business community, I think that kind of goes in the right direction as well, where sometimes you might have immigrants that might be hesitant to try to engage themselves in the community because they either struggle with the language or they're either intimidated going and talking to people who don't look like them. And I think the same is true for white people talking to immigrants in their community. So doing this from a business perspective, too, and getting them on board, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Well, my plan calls for that businesses get trained on implicit bias and that they get certified that they've gone through the training. In fact, like you have to take a test. So that it means you've actually absorbed the information about bias in our country. And then you get certified, and then you can advertise that you are certified. In fact, I go so far as to say that that a community cannot license a business. You know, I mean, everybody, you've got to go through a variety of licenses here in Minneapolis or St. Paul. You cannot get a liquor license unless you go through implicit bias, human inclusivity training, and you get certified that you have done that. And why? Because if you're going to be dealing with the public, you have an obligation to understand the public that you are dealing with and to leave your biases at home or in a perfect world to get rid of your biases, because now you understand that really we are far more alike than we are different.
Any other points you'd like to highlight that's in your plan before we I have a couple more questions regarding it, but I want to make sure we kind of highlight everything that's in your plan. So anything else that you'd like to highlight?
No, I just would urge, people who are interested in this, go to my website at elliekrug.com, go to the projects page, and you'll be able to read up on the plan and download. You get a copy of it and take it and go take the plan and start talking with people about this, because obviously unless people get on board with it, the plan's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, because that's where I wanted to go next, is how do you implement that type of plan? Because if some people are looking at this on the surface, they see this as some big initiative and some big grandiose plan that's going to be tough to implement. It's just going to be a whole lot of extra work for people, whether personally or professionally. So how do you go through some of those challenges of getting people excited about trying to implement something like this?
So first of all, I get a whole bunch of people on buses, and we start at Uptown and drive all the way down to the Marshall Avenue Bridge on Lake Street. And I tell everybody, take a good look, because this is the result of not acting boldly. This is the result of what happens when all we do is simply talk about the problem and admire it. We have to think differently and act differently than what we have done. Without it, I think Governor Walz earlier today said he thinks we've only got one more chance to get this right. I wholeheartedly agree with that. We only have one more chance. And the same old strategies, well, we'll appoint a commission, we'll study it, we'll issue a report, go look at that. It's no good anymore. It's not working. And so to get people on board, yes, it's bold, what I proposed with the 10-point plan. Yes, it's innovative. And yes, it's scary for a lot of people. But you know what? We've got to do something like this in order for us to work our way out of what's gotten us into where we are right now.
And the point you just brought up, I think, is important, is that it's not just another study on what's happening. This is actual actionable items that you're talking about, not just more studies, which we often see sometimes at the government level when it comes to having incidents like we've had with George Floyd.
Yeah, I'm not a big person on studying, studying the object and admiring it. I am an idea person, and I am somebody who executes. So, my work is the type. I mean, last year, 150 different talks or trainings across the country. The year before that, over 170. And I am a doer. There are many other doers that are out there. Those doers need to come forward, and they have to say, enough. We've had enough talking. We now need to do. And if this 10-point plan is like, I disagree with points 3, 4, and 5. Well, that is absolutely fine. Let's give me some alternate points, but let's stop talking about it and let's start doing it. I am so adamant about that, Brett. I cannot tell you how adamant I am.
Well, I think that's also kind of what gets people disengaged from the entire process, where they're sitting there and thinking, well, I'm being hurt by what's happening right now. We don't need to have any more conversations or any more studies on what's happening. We need something to actually change what's going on in the world.
Well, we have to. And the baton is being passed from the boomers onto the younger generation, because the boomers, which, of course, I'm part of, the boomers have not gotten it right. We haven't. We've gone into selfishness. We've gone into political infighting. We've forgotten common values about America. We have absolutely forgotten them, and we've only gotten into values about me or my group. That's it. We have forgotten that America was founded on the idea of common values. Our younger people understand this. And so we need to, as a country, get back to all of us understanding that there are some things in the world that we need to do for the common good, like fund education for younger people. The disparity between third graders of color and with people who are white. So the third grade achievement rate, where their third graders are ready for reading and meet those standards, only 39% children of color meet those standards, Brett, compared to 64% of white children. Okay, and why is that? Because we're just letting children of color fall through the cracks. We're not doing what we need to do in order to give them the tools so that they can succeed. And I have quotation marks around the phrase they. And we're seeing that right now, real time. It's been because for the last 30 years, our country has refused to invest in humans. And instead, we've invested in corporations and we've invested in, fat cat people, but we have not invested in our country. Sorry, you're getting me started, Brett.
No, I think it's important to bring up that you're talking about some of these numbers and the importance of how we need to change in our society. I know we only got a couple minutes left here, Ellie, before you got to get running. But this is Ellie Krug with Ellie 2.0 Radio. You can hear Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. talking about her 10-point plan for changing Minnesota's diversity and inclusion landscape. You can find that in her newsletter, The Ripple. Also, elliekrug.com. We'll get that posted on am950radio.com. Also be in our newsletter, which is sent out tomorrow. Before I let you go here, Ellie, I do want to talk about your experience going to Minneapolis over the weekend, because as I understand, we gave you media credentials and you went down there and reported on the front lines amid some of the protests and other activities that were happening down there. You can follow along, since we only got a couple of minutes. Follow Ellie Krug on Twitter, at Ellie Krug, as she talks about some of her experiences talking to residents of Minneapolis. But what were your overall thoughts heading down there and having a chance to speak with people who have been affected by what's been happening?
I went to the corner of Lake and Park Street at about 10:30 on Friday night. I immediately got there and I saw a young man torching cars parked in a parking lot. I went up to people on the street and I asked, why are you here? Why is it important for you to be here right now? And what I heard overwhelmingly, Brett, is I heard people saying that the country has become unfair. that people don't have the equal chance to succeed. And I also heard a lot about fear. I spoke with a man, an African-American man, who said, I have a 7-year-old son at home. And when he's 11, I fear that he will be fair game for the police. That is why I'm on the street right now. Brett, America, we can do much better than what we're doing. We can. And we go back to what I said earlier. We all have good hearts. We really do. We want to do the right thing. We're just afraid, or we don't know how to do it. And help. I'm happy to help lead you, get you past your fear, and get you to the point where you know what to do. And there are many other Illy Krugs out there who are willing to do that work.
Highly recommend you go and follow Ellie over on Twitter. Her Twitter handle is @EllieKrug, as she talks more about her experiences going down there, as you do. I'm talking about you in the third person for some reason there, Ellie.
That's okay.
But you're down there. Yeah, you were down in Minneapolis on Friday night into Saturday. So, yeah, make sure you follow Ellie over there on Twitter @EllieKrug. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock, but really appreciate the time today. And make sure you listen to Ellie's show as well every Monday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. And I suppose next time you tape, I will be seeing you back here at the station.
Okay, Brett, thanks so very much. Take care, okay?
Absolutely, you too.
All right. Thanks for all that you do, Brett. Okay,
yeah,
bye-bye.
Definitely, and you can follow more with Ellie Krug again at Twitter, @EllieKrug, or on her website, elliekrug.com. We'll come on back with more here on FYI Politics.
Minnehaha Falls Landscaping creates outdoor environments that grow beauty and support health and wellness. We provide everything needed for people and pollinators to grow healthy together in the home landscape. Contact us for landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, rain gardens, and bee lawns. Minnehaha Falls Landscaping is a business rooted in healthy soil. We rely on soil health to beautify landscapes, restore ecosystems, and protect pollinators. We love sharing our soil secrets with everyone. Visit us at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. You might recognize my son, Charlie.
Hi, everyone.
Coronavirus has impacted us in many ways, but we at AM950 wanted to take time to recognize a group of people who are experiencing this crisis in a very different way, high school and college graduates.
I'm a member of the Hopkins High School Class of 2020. Many in my grade were looking forward to ending out our senior year with a graduation ceremony. Unfortunately, all of the traditional events won't take place for my class.
Funny, they managed to get all the testing and finals in.
Yeah, all the fun stuff. Anyway, we understand no one can plan for a pandemic, and you have to make sacrifices for the common good. Considering many people are having a much harder time, the class of 2020 will manage. We'll miss the graduation experience, but we'll share this time as we head into the next chapter of our lives. Oh, and by the way, go Gophers.
On behalf of everyone at AM950, a big salute to all the graduates for 2020. We know this isn't how you envisioned this happening, but just because there's no grand ceremony doesn't mean we're not proud. You've accomplished so much. All our best as you take the next steps in your journey. Congratulations from AM950.
If you're looking to save money on your home or building improvement project, check out Better Futures Minnesota's reuse retail warehouse in South Minneapolis. We carry salvaged building materials such as cabinetry, flooring, plumbing fixtures, appliances, lighting, and more, saving you money and saving the planet by keeping these items out of the landfill, by giving them another life. Selections change daily, and we also take donations. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under Reuse Warehouse to learn more. Let us know AM950 sent you.
Howdy, Matt McNeil here, and I love Rudy Luther, and not just because of my love of the Toyota Sienna. I keep going back because of Luther's top-notch customer service. A great example of that is the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchase, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at Holiday Station stores and $5 off the Works car washes. The Luther Advantage Card keeps you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle, which in turn makes me and many others very loyal Rudy Luther customers. Find out more at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Now, more than ever, we are being faced daily with the topic of human mortality, and for many people, estate planning has been top of mind. Getting your estate planning done now can be easy and cost-effective. Shroman Law offers virtual options for initial consultations so that new clients can safely initiate the process. With many facing uncertain financial situations, Shroman Law also offers affordable fees for legal documents. Learn more at ShromanLaw.com. That's ShromenLaw.com.
Is your remote workforce putting your company at risk? Cyber criminals are targeting your employees with COVID-19 inspired emails and attacking businesses like yours. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. Rimark has the tools and expertise to enable your employees to work securely from home. If you need help getting your staff to work remotely and securely, call 651-328-8900 or go to RimarkIT.com. That's 651-328-8900 or RimarkIT.com.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today, expect sunny skies with a high near 86. Tonight, clear skies continue with a low around 63. Tomorrow, a chance of thunderstorms in the late afternoon, a high of 87 and a low of 64. Friday, sunny with a high of 84 and a low of 59. Let Minnehaha Falls Landscapes create an outdoor space that is truly yours. Offering landscape renovations, patios, walkways, retaining walls, butterfly gardens, and more. Check them out at MinnehahaFallsLandscape.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you on FYI Politics. Didn't even get a chance to introduce our producer today, Eric Nelson. Been a while since I've had a chance to talk to you, Eric, and we've had quite a bit of news happen since you were in last. Very depressing week of news, to say the least.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I've actually kind of been inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't describe it as depressing necessarily. As like,
yeah, there are...
It's a opportunity, like, because we all knew this was going on. It's
yeah.
just mm-hmm. we saw people finally make their voices heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, depressing in the sense that obviously, yeah, George Floyd was
yeah,
killed. But you're right, yeah,
bad.
Yeah. But you are right that there are opportunities for changes that can be made. So yeah, I think you might be right stating it in more of a mixed bag kind of sense. We got a ton of news to get to before I get to my interview with Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. So let's do a rundown of some of the big things in the news. The big headline is that Keith Ellison, the attorney general who has taken over the court proceedings in the Derek Chauvin case. Chauvin, again, in case you've been living under a rock, was the police officer who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd that led to his murder. Originally, Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder by Hennepin County attorney Mike Freeman, and it was worrying for a number of reasons, because if you read how third-degree murder works, essentially you can't get a conviction unless it was proven that the offender's action was putting others' lives in danger. And while it's certainly bad to have your knee on someone's neck, that doesn't necessarily endanger other people's lives, which means by a technicality, there was a chance Chauvin might have gotten off on that charge, but Ellison did end up upgrading that charge to second-degree murder. Of course, that does increase what the prosecutors will have to prove in the case, since now they will have to prove that there was an intent to kill George Floyd. But I think overall, I mean, third-degree was not going to be enough considering what happened to George Floyd, so... Yeah, Keith Ellison has upgraded those charges to second-degree murder, and the other three officers that were on the scene are going to be charged. We don't know specifically what those charges will be, but they eventually will be facing some sort of criminal prosecution. So that's the latest on what's been happening on the legal proceedings in regards to the case of Derek Chauvin and the other officers who murdered George Floyd. Also, in regards to the curfew that's been in place for many Twin Cities towns over the past few days, at least in Minneapolis, that curfew is going to continue tonight and Thursday from 10 p.m. until 4 a.m. They haven't announced anything about what will happen possibly for the weekend, but I imagine being that weekends are weekends, there's probably going to be some sort of curfew that has been put in place. So do keep that in mind if you live in Minneapolis, that curfew is going to be extended for today and also tomorrow, 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., at least in Minneapolis and St. Paul. For your surrounding suburbs, just make sure you check in with your local cities. So coming up in just a few minutes, I am going to be speaking with Susan Kent, the Senate Minority Leader, because there has been some weird stuff going on with Minnesota Republicans in the state legislature. Chief among them was this letter that the head of the Minneapolis Police Union, Bob Kroll, sent to his members, which ended up getting leaked. By the way, I have a friend who says we should be calling Bob Kroll Bob Arpaio. Very fitting, by the way, I think to get the little Joe Arpaio reference in there. But anyways, among one of the things that was in the letter that was sent by Bob Kroll was this idea of having some sort of end around on the authority of Governor Tim Walz and essentially having the Senate draft their own response of how the National Guard would respond to what's happening. Very, very concerning, especially if you follow the timeline, because even though Gazelka is saying that Bob Kroll was exaggerating their conversation, that's all fine and good until you realize that Gazelka did have a phone call with the White House Friday night into Saturday that he was bragging about, in which he was talking about how Trump needs to be bringing federal troops into Minnesota. The other thing we're going to be talking about with Susan Kent is Mary Kiffmeyer. Mary Kiffmeyer ended up getting involved in a Facebook thread with other white supremacists. I won't read the original comment that was posted by a very racist person. It's a racist comment. I don't think we can even read it on the air. But one of the things that that Mary Kiffmeyer posted was, today on Fox News, they want $13 trillion or $375,000 for each black, putting it in those types of terms. And she continued this conversation with this white supremacist. So very, very disturbing stuff going on with members of the legislature. We'll be speaking with Minority Leader Susan Kent up next here on FYI Politics.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for 25 years. You'll not find someone who loves their job more than me. The process of painting your home could not be easier. Go to nickslavik.com, click on the button Paint My Walls or Paint My Cabinets. I'll personally be in contact with you to get an estimate, either in-home or a free virtual estimate. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. We're not like other contractors.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed. Also, the Army National Guard's education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson here on a Wednesday afternoon. So we're joined now by the Senate Minority Leader, Susan Kent. She is with the DFL and represents District 53, which includes Woodbury and other portions of the Southeast Metro, as we need to talk through a number of topics, not just in terms of what the legislature is planning on doing in response to the situation with George Floyd being murdered by the police officers in Minneapolis, including Derek Chauvin, but also some actions we had from other Republican members of the legislature. So lots to cover. And Susan, appreciate the time today.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Brett.
Absolutely. So I got to start off with this Bob Kroll letter, which ended up being released via social media. I believe it was a couple of days ago by the former Minneapolis police chief, Janae Harteau, because one of the parts in this letter that Bob Kroll wrote to his other union members, and I'll read directly from this, was one of the paragraphs in this letter where he said, quote, "I've had numerous conversations with politicians at the state level. I gave a detailed plan of action, including a range of 2,000 to 3,000 National Guards deployments, where they would deploy their allocations throughout the city and St. Paul, in a phone meeting with Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka." Now, the next sentence is key to focus on. "The Senate was going to try and run the actions that the governor displayed he is clearly incompetent to do." So I don't know how else to read into that, Susan, but that sounds like a way where at best he's trying to run an end around the governor, or at worst it's almost like kind of a coup attempt. What do you make of this letter that we had released from Bob Kroll?
Well, it is deeply troubling what is being described in this letter. You know, this is
this is not how this is supposed to work. You know, our governor is the executive branch in our state. He has been working, for example, on the pandemic with emergency authorities, and I know that has been a thorn in the side for some of the legislative Republicans. But to see this, these are some pretty challenging claims, and if it is true that Majority Leader Gazelka was having that conversation, I think people need to know that, and there needs to be some clarity here.
And you had some conversations with Paul Gazelka, I believe, when the day the letter was released. And as far as I could tell, you were talking about this at the time. Gazelka said he had not seen the letter, correct? He seemed kind of oblivious to what was happening.
Right. And you know, we are working together. We have a special session coming up. And so the legislative leaders were together and was, you know, when you're getting a Zoom call together and you're waiting everybody to get on the line, we were really just sort of chit-chatting and it came up. And I specifically said, it's like Kroll has made some pretty amazing claims in his letter about your conversation. And I said, you know, and he said something that indicated that it was something different. And I said, so are you saying that he's mischaracterizing the conversation? And he said, I haven't seen the letter. So I said, well, I will send it to you. And I, you know, emailed it as promptly as I could. So, you know, I think it's just important for him to see what is being said about their conversation and to really clarify the accuracy or inaccuracy of that.
I think there's much more clarification that's needed because as he's given some interviews, Paul Gazelka, on other media outlets, it sounds like he's saying, well, Kroll either was exaggerating about what was saying or part of what he claims was not said. But what doesn't quite line up with the timeline is that it looks like Friday night into Saturday. I mean, we had Senator Gazelka going on different media outlets saying how he was having conversations with the White House saying, hey, we need to get federal troops into Minneapolis. And that kind of seems to line up with what he was talking about with Bob Kroll, especially when Gazelka gave an earlier press conference and was largely touting some of the ideas he was talking with Bob Kroll about. Talk about that a little bit, just because the timing is just very concerning with this, especially with that call to the White House sometime Friday night into Saturday morning.
Well, I think Minnesotans need to understand how people are acting on their behalf. And I think these are good questions. And, you know, that's why I wanted to make sure he had seen what was being claimed. And, you know, I hope he will be transparent about what's going on. You know, ultimately, I know that letter from Bob Kroll is about dividing us because that's what it seems to always be. And I know that at this time in our state and in our communities, and particularly in Minneapolis, we are coming together and we need to come together to heal and to make badly needed changes correct centuries of injustice. And this is an important issue to know what's going on from the highest ranking Republican in the state and from a government perspective to make sure that there is real clarity on separation of powers and who has what authority to do what. In the meantime, we have hurting communities, damaged communities. And this has been an incredibly challenging week that has had ripple effects, and we're seeing it now globally. We need to work together and focus on what's doing right by the people of Minnesota.
And one final question regarding this Bob Kroll letter. During that time period from about late Thursday night or into Friday morning, when it looks like Gazelka was having these conversations with Kroll up until Saturday morning, was Gazelka in contact with you or any other members of the Senate about having possibly their own Senate response in terms of how to deploy the National Guard? Was he having any conversations with you or other senators?
And you cut out there. Were you asking if Gazelka had any of those conversations with
us? With you guys at all, other members of the Senate, about what was happening in terms of maybe having the Senate's own kind of unilateral response with what's happening in Minneapolis and how other law enforcement and National Guard troops should be employed. Did he have any contact with you or other senators that you know of?
No, not to, I don't know of anybody beyond me. I have a feeling I would have heard about it, particularly in the wake of all of this. Mm-hmm. But no, he and I did not speak of it. We weren't in contact, and you know, the days there were together, we were all doing really late nights and trying to support our members who represent those communities, and just assist in any way we could. So we had and I have to go back and check my notes, but we had a call with the governor somewhere late in the week, probably on Friday, I think. But you know, there was no conversation before that.
Gotcha. Just wanted to be clear about that. Okay. Before I move on to another topic in regards to how the legislature plans on responding to the situation, I do got to bring this up too. I mean, I hate going through these topics and talking about other actions that the other side is doing, but this really stood out to me. This is something that Senator Mary Kiffmeyer did on Facebook yesterday, where she ended up responding to a white supremacist on Facebook and largely getting into a conversation with this white supremacist on her Facebook page. What I'm referencing is a post that was made that Kiffmeyer commented on, where she said how she was watching Fox News, and I don't have the exact quote here, but she was saying how apparently members of the black community watch, and this is her quote, each black to get something like $370,000, and it was disturbing being that she continued this conversation with the white supremacist who was making other very derogatory comments. So this certainly is a very concerning to see a very high-ranking Republican senator going and engaging in these types of conversations with what looks like a white supremacist.
And I will say, of all the things that were in there that were most troubling to me, and I also don't have it in front of me, but there was a comment that the other person made that was really racist. And the first thing she said in response was, of course. And that actually hit me almost more dramatically than some of the other comments that were in there. And, you know, I mean, this is, especially in this moment, right, when we are hopefully all really confronting the pervasive and systemic racism that exists in our society, after we have watched, you know, in horror, the inhumane murder of George Floyd on a Minneapolis street, and then to traffic in this language. And then I will just, you know, point out, I served on the state government committee with her as chair for 3 years. This is the person in the Senate who is the gatekeeper when it comes to elections and voting. So it is troubling, and it is troubling. I've been on calls all morning, so I've not been monitoring social media. I've been keeping an eye on my email. I haven't seen any condemnation of any of that from anyone in the majority party in the Senate. So apparently they think this is okay.
Yeah, and last
I may be mistaken. If I've missed something, I may be mistaken. But
yeah, the last
it's disappointing.
Yeah, I was going to say the last I think I saw in terms of the response from the Republican Senate was that, well, I won't even get into the response, but you're right. They largely weren't, condemning what she was saying on that Facebook post.
If it was a comment from the spokesperson for the for the caucus, first of all, that is a response that shouldn't be coming from the spokesperson. That is something that should be coming from leadership. I think the response was that it was badly worded.
And, yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, going right.
That is an absolutely inadequate answer to. For what happened in that exchange. And it wasn't like there was one answer. Like I said, the words "of course" to me were the worst.
A couple other topics I want to speak to you about here as we're talking with Senate Minority Leader Susan Kent. She is with the DFL. She is from District 53, which is areas of the Southeast Metro, including Woodbury. So yesterday we had an announcement that the Minneapolis Police Department was going to be facing a civil rights investigation. Senator Kent, I want to get your response to the fact that Minneapolis is going to be facing that civil rights investigation, and also what you guys plan on possibly doing in the state legislature in terms of reform for law enforcement.
In terms of the charge, in terms of human rights, I really appreciate the administration's courage in stepping up to have these really hard conversations and look at what's been going on, because I think they laid out the case, and I think, you know, those of us, and I've I'm not a Minneapolis resident, but I work closely with many who care deeply about that community. We all care deeply about Minneapolis. And, you know, these are things that have been talked about and whispered about for many years. And so to see finally taking a strong stand and a serious look at what appear to be very systemic abuses of human rights is an important step.
Now, at the legislative level, are you guys talking about taking any actions in terms of either investigations or maybe having police reforms in terms of how police interact with citizens? Have we had any conversations or ideas being floated in either the Senate or the House?
Well, it's important to point out that this the last week has made this urgent, but it's been urgent. Many of us have known this is urgent. So it is good to see the conversation really focusing here and people who may not have appreciated the urgency waking up to it. But a lot of the things that we are proposing, these have been discussed for a long time. And there is just often, for example, I helped work on, in a relatively minor role, the legislation to allow body-worn cameras for law enforcement agencies in Minnesota a couple years ago. And that was really hard to get done, because there's so much resistance to changing how we watch how our communities are being policed. And, you know, we were able to do it, but it just shows that we need to have a real commitment and everybody working together to recognize that this is not business as usual, that what was done by four officers in Minneapolis, former officers, to one of our neighbors, is unacceptable. It's horrific. And it is, unfortunately, part of a pattern. So we can't just chalk it up to a bad apple. You know, I mean, this was an extreme situation, but we know, even when they're not on videotape, things are happening to our black and brown male neighbors. And we have to step up to that. And I am hopeful. And I will say, even in a community like mine, you know, here in the suburbs, you know, people are going to work and soccer practice and, you know, the things we do, as families. I have been deeply gratified and moved by the response that I've seen in my community of people who really recognize this for what it is. And they know that it's not just a Minneapolis issue, you know, that it affects all of us when we have that fundamental betrayal of trust, that fundamental tearing of our social fabric. And we have to work together to weave that back together. I know the House Posse Caucus yesterday announced an ambitious agenda. We have members in the Senate DFL, members of our Posse Caucus, and also others who have been working on really trying to do significant change. I was in a conversation earlier. We keep using the word reform. That's frankly not good enough. We need to transform, not reform, transform how we handle policing and interactions with our communities. Police officers, peace officers, as they are often called, should be working with our communities and with our neighbors and having those conversations and engaging. And some communities benefit from that. Others clearly do not.
Yeah, I really hope we do see some action being taken. And I like the term that you used, not just reform, but transform, because for a while, Minneapolis was viewed as being one of the leading reformers in terms of having a police department that was being reformed. And unfortunately, we've seen it. Well, there's been many problems that have persisted with the police department, and I hope we really can see some change during the upcoming special session. Hopefully there will be some talks about that, because you were alluding to the fact that, you know, a lot of people who live in your district who, you know, are somewhat far removed from Minneapolis are even on board with that, and hopefully we can even have some Republicans on board too. We've certainly seen pretty much universal condemnation for what happened to George Floyd being killed by that police officer. So hopefully we do at least end up having some action being taken during this upcoming special session.
I agree. And, you know, this is not a time for political grandstanding on this issue. That is obscene. This is a time for serious consideration of solutions. And I am hopeful that we're going to be able to make a difference. It's challenging because this is a divided legislature, and as we keep saying famously, the only one in the country. But if we are going to do anything, certainly before we have elections and come back into session next year with a new legislature, it will have to be bipartisan. I know that Republicans have been speaking strongly about how, in terms of rejecting what happened, and calling for change, but it can't just be window dressing. It has to be legitimate commitment to making meaningful, significant changes. So I hope we can do that.
We've been speaking with Susan Kent. She is the Senate Minority Leader with the DFL, represents District 53, which includes Woodbury and other parts of the Southeast Metro. Senator Kent, really appreciate the time today.
Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to some of our members who have signed up for AM 950 memberships, including Ruth in Maple Grove, Edward in Buffalo, Michael in Minneapolis, Mary in Coon Rapids, Dave in Long Lake. You can also sign up for a membership over at am950radio.com. Thanks for listening.